This episode is brought to you by Cart Driver, Denver's home for wood-fired pizzas, fresh oysters, seasonal market plates, cocktails, and conversation.
This week on Meet and Three, meet four of our HRN Hall of Fame inductees. These prolific individuals are writers who have changed the way we talk about food. We'll take a look at the journeys that shaped their literary voices.
I was heading off into the unknown to spend my junior year of college in Paris.
We'll explore the culinary landscape they work within.
You know, it was that whole self-made American idea that you can just kind of create a new world from scratch, including a new way of eating.
And look at the transformative effect that their work has on what we eat and where it comes from.
It gets down to management deciding that humane handling is important. You've got to have management that cares. And if management doesn't care, then you're going to have a bunch of bad stuff.
You can learn more about HRN's 10th anniversary Hall of Fame at heritageradionetwork.org/Hall of Fame. And don't forget to subscribe to Meat and Three wherever you listen to podcasts. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, guys, it's August 6th, 2019. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host here on Beer Sessions Radio. It's heritageradionetwork.org. We have a special show today. It's always a special show, guys. This one, our buddies AJ Kearns from At 16 Ounce Canvas helped put together. We're going to talk about beer art and beer label art. So, AJ, give us a little intro about what the show's about and why you brought these cats together.
Thanks. First, Jimmy, thanks so much for having me here today. I'm really excited. The reason that we do it, it's a 16-ounce canvas, the art of craft beer. We try to feature the artists and designers who help bring your favorite beers and breweries to life. I think that we started about 3 years ago with the focus on being... The idea is just kind of a crazy idea we had one night about branding and the idea that cans were really becoming the preferred kind of format for beers. You know, we were seeing a lot of it with... Some of the early folks of like Tired Hands and Treehouse were just putting stickers on. And from there, you really kind of see where we are today. And so it's just been really an exciting story to hear. Some folks, you know, are full-time staff, some are freelance. And we're really kind of, we're just trying to introduce people to everyone's story and where they come from.
And you brought two designers in. So let's, the two designers, just give a quick intro.
So we have Dana Lev Birch, who does work with Barrier Brewing Company,
yo,
as well as Alewife. He's a double hitter. And then we have Earl Holloway, who does work with KCBC right here in Brooklyn.
Hey.
Great. And our good friend Josh Bernstein, who's a beer writer, many of you know him. Josh, you've been writing about beer art, beer cans. Tell us why and what you've been covering.
Yeah, I think beer can art really presents this really unique opportunity for people. We're in this era right now where we don't hold our albums anymore, that we don't have the sort of tactile connection to our substances. But I think beer cans really provide this new canvas for people to really embrace. And so you get to see, you get to bring the beer into your body and take in the art with your eyes. And so it really provides this really unique opportunity to combine two distinct disciplines together.
That's great. So Earl, and Dan, I've known you for years. You did a bunch of Jimmy's Number 43 stuff.
Sure did.
Yeah, actually, the Beer Sessions Radio logo was designed by Dan. How did it evolve for you? I know you were doing beer bar art. You work with Fool's Gold and those guys. Tell us some of the beer accounts you've worked with in the past, leading up to beer cans.
Yeah, I worked at Union Beer Distributors as a designer for about 3 years. And then I left there, and I had to make a living. So I you know, luckily had a lot of clients that I really liked through Union. And I did stuff for 4th Ave, for you.
Yeah, 4th Avenue Pub, yeah.
4th Ave Pub. And then all of Patrick Doniger's bars, Alewife,
Fool's Gold, the Jeffrey. And you take more of an illustration approach, don't you?
Oh, of course, yes. I went to school for illustration, so illustration is definitely my strong suit. But you know, I also like to design typography and design in general. So, yeah.
Do you think these cans offer a new sort of like artistic avenue for people coming out of art school? And I mean, some of the pathways have been taken away, and so but art, like the beer can art with like new cans coming out every single week, provides sort of like this endless stream of potential work.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's totally like what you said with the album art, because that's what I was into. Like I loved having like an album and seeing the artwork, and yeah, this is the next avenue.
And Earl, tell us your background a little bit. We're going to talk a lot. We have like almost an hour show coming.
Yeah, so many sure. Words. Josh, I guess,
the wordsmith.
Yeah, the way it started for me was I just kind of studied illustration as Daniel did. And then I kind of like returned to an old love, which is basically, comic book oriented illustrative work, which is kind of the same thing, but like a little bit more in the cartooning vein. Produced my own independent comics. I had a full daytime job. I was wholly committed to just making my own work for myself and people that were into what I was doing. And then poof, I didn't rub the bottle, but a genie came out and asked me if I wanted to work for KCBC to produce all their labels. And I said, yeah.
You brought, you're going to tell us because you brought KCBC cans.
Yeah.
What beer is that? Sure, and what's on the label?
So this is Il Purgatorio. It's an Italian style Pilsner. It's very, very drinkable, especially for the summer. I would say the number one thing that you need to know about this label is that Gamork from The Neverending Story is referenced right in the center with sort of a smoldering throat. Yeah, it's pretty
good.
Cool.
You got to look at the can. We're not going to talk about it too much. But so, AJ, tell us, 16-ounce canvas, beer art, you've been obsessed with this.
Yeah. Originally it was an idea that I had, and I didn't think, to be honest, I didn't think we'd be this far. I had a few drinks probably in, I bounced around the idea with some friends. They said, I would listen to that. And I spent months researching, because about 3 years ago, you couldn't pick up a can and say, labels by, you know, Dan or by Joe or whatever. And now the breweries have really seen the importance of that, and they'll put their hashtag or their Instagram on the cans, which is a nice, makes my job a lot easier. But so we called it our first 12 pack, you know, we're playing off the beer puns. And at that point I thought, okay, that was it. We did it. And then I started getting a lot of messages. Hey, what about this person, that person? And now we've interviewed, you know, about 130 artists over 12 countries. And probably about, you know, if you count some of the artists, probably over 150 breweries. And it's really nice because there's that chase to have an original look. But people's hard work, their hustle, the story that got them to that, you know. One of the great stories, David Paul Seymour, who does burial cans, he used to be an architect. And he spent, you know, years being an architect doing gig posters and band stuff on the side. And went through a few variations, you know, of jobs, got laid off, and his wife was like, why do you keep finding, you know, going back to these jobs you hate when you love doing this? And now he's probably one of the most popular, you know, beer artists. And he does, you know, and so it's really nice just to see those stories that are bigger than art, about just kind of, you know, everyone here in the room does something that they love. It's bigger than themselves, you know, and they put their heart into it. And it's not always easy, you know, but, you know, look at Josh's, you know, he's on his, what, your sixth book, your seventh book?
Yeah, number five, good heavens.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
Right.
Just seems like six or seven. Like,
right.
Nobody,
and he's,
nobody cares anymore. Like, right. Another book? Didn't you see one?
Right. We first met at the Craft Brewers Conference in Nashville, and he was literally a man on the street, you know, like promoting his book and being out there. And so it's just inspiring when you see everyone's stories that it's bigger than art. You know, and I can't really draw very well and what have you, but I just see it as a bigger story, which has been inspiring to me in a lot of ways.
Great. And Dan, you introduced me a while ago to AJ by email.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Told me about 16-ounce canvas. So just give me a little more, some backstory, how you met him. And
AJ had Earl on the show, and Earl recommended me onto AJ's show. And so, you know, circular thing. I just thought, well, mm-hmm. he should be on this show. So
yeah, and you mentioned some artists and labels like Burial. You guys tell me about some other artists who are making great labels and some of the breweries that are making labels we should check out. I mean, I know like locally we had Greenpoint a few years ago when we did the show. We liked Greenpoint, right. Beer and mm-hmm. Ales.
Yeah, yeah.
Who do you guys like now?
Pipeworks is always great to me. Mm-hmm. They always have really unique, compelling art. And Half Acre 2 in Chicago always has really really fun stuff.
Yeah, that's Phineas Jones for Half Acre. And then Pipeworks is really cool. And that's weird because, like, for me, when I see the beer cans, like, I don't really see them much now as much beer. I see them as the artist. But, yeah, Pipeworks is great because they do a collaborative. They probably have, like, 4 to 6 different artists that do their works. But then you have Mike Lawrence at Tired Hands. You know, I have Carl Grandin, who does Omnipollo. Kevin Simo with Trillium.
Browery West.
Yeah, right. Browery West is a collaborative. They have different artists all over the place. They have a lot of, like, street artists like Nikos and some really cool folks who do some really unique stuff. But it's not only art. Like, I never thought that topography, like you were saying, you know, Dan, like, you like to do topography. I never thought that was really, I kind of early on, I didn't do a lot of type folks who came on. But when you realize that people are making their own font face and the whole alphabet, and they're really, you know, there's a brewery outside of Philly called Neshaminy Creek Brewing Company, and JP Flexner, he made an entire, you know, A through Z to fit, to be unique to them. And so people are doing things.
I did the same thing for Alewife as well.
Right. You don't realize it. And it's really, it's these little intricate details that kind of, for a sports fan, right, you say they don't show up on the scorecard, and they're really kind of cool to find out.
We did Dan and I did a work party in the middle of the winter, like, running low on vitamins and, like, no sunlight or whatever. And he's like, I gotta get out of my apartment. I gotta come over. And I'm like, yeah, you should. And then I saw what he had to do for the day, and it was all typography, like literally hand making a single font for potentially a beer that was not going to be replicated. It was just a one shot.
Do you remember what it was?
I have no idea. No. There's too many.
that's very true.
So I saw that, and I was like, oh man, like, you know, just. What, 8 hours worth of work or something like that for a one shot, for the font on a one shot, which he also does the illustration for and the copy and the fine touches and all that kind of stuff. So,
you know, Josh, for me, cans are new. You were one of the first guys. I mean, in addition to your writing, I know you've always hosted some events, and especially around New York City, you were one of the first guys to do a can jam.
Yeah, the can jam was something we started over at Threes Brewing maybe about 3+ years ago in Complete IPA. I think my third book. I'm losing track now. The whole idea was that there's all these cans out there that are sort of limited edition. They're hard to get. So instead of having people wait in line, why not bring everybody together in one place all together where you can't take these beers home, but you have to have them on premise, on site, and share them with people too. And I mean, What really struck me about it, too, is that it was all the enjoyment factor, too, but people were taking pictures of these cans nonstop, and so you'd watch these giant pyramids of cans slowly grow over the course of a day as everybody got one can after the next. And it was really this, you know, very heartening thing to me that it was, A, bringing people together, and B, they're also sort of cherishing the art just as much as they were cherishing the liquid.
All right, see you, Juan. That's Juan from Bar 180, 177. It's a couple of shows we're doing, but yeah, the cans, and it is a great platform for art. I mean, you're right, you mentioned albums and records. That was my thought coming over today. I was like, wow, albums used to be something you'd collect partly because of the art. And was there anything when albums ended and before cans, was there anything else that you guys worked on that was similar?
To speak to Joshua's point, like, on the opener, I feel like this door sort of closed on freelance illustration for print or online even. The idea of, like, a magazine or a newspaper hiring you, that's how I started. One of my first jobs was with Stephen Heller in the New York Times Book Review. Kind of a big deal for me. I got the cover. I got some inside illustration. And then maybe it was because I wasn't very good at the time, or 9/11 happened, I'm not really sure. The door kind of closed. And it went from me being able to sort of make it on freelance illustration, not a lot of money, but I made it for the first couple of years out of school, and then the door closed. And that's kind of when I went underground artistically, where I was just doing stuff for myself and everybody that was that knew who I was and what I was doing. And I don't want to, like, get too crazy about it, but, like, for me, a rebirth is, like, definitely working on this gigantic canvas that is on a beer can. I know it's small.
But it's also
in your hand, but like, you know.
But your audience is greater too, in a sense too. That would people that would not typically maybe pick up your art.
Yeah.
They would not go to a bookstore, underground comic shop and like pick up whatever you did.
Yeah.
And or buy an illustrated or buy a poster of something you've done, but they'll pick up the can.
Yeah. For example, I'm not blowing smoke up my butt or anything like that, but like the middle of last year, somebody from the New York Knicks like approached me to do a campaign for them, like a social media campaign, and that would not have happened had I not had this platform of label art to rely on as a form of advertisement. Like, it's, you know.
Yeah, I and you're so busy with that, you turned it down, right, Earl?
But, you know, AJ, you know,
I had to turn it down. It was way too much work.
So you're documenting it, but, this shift.
Because earlier it was really the idea that you hope that the beer tastes as good as the can looks, and I think early on that was really kind of the premise. Like I went to business school for marketing, and so I really saw that people were, and then the social media explosion was that people were just taking pictures of these labels, and you hope that it tasted good, but you know, but one of the things I do, which people think is weird, if I haven't had the beer and I'm interviewing somebody and they want, and if you're listening and you want to send me more beer, that's a good idea. But we don't get as much beer. But when we do, I'll wait till after the episode records because I don't want to think, oh, this beer tastes terrible. I relate that to Dan or I relate that to Joe. And so, like, I think it's a sensory thing. And I don't know if that just – but that's really how I try to present it.
Well, definitely I would say for beer, I mean, the evolution of how it's marketed. It used to be bottles. You know, a bottle was a label, something you could sell. But then so many photos were of like Boss Pour or a glass of beer. That's really not sexy, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, like we talk about the demise of bottles. If bottles still outsell cans, like by a huge margin across the board. I mean, it's not. I mean, within this craft beer sector, definitely that cans labels are super important, especially as limited edition one-off beers. But I mean, bottles and like static labels are still king out there in the marketplace. I mean, this is still pretty small.
Yeah, they're still middle America, so.
It's funny you mentioned that because when I first started working for KCBC, they were like, oh, do you want to design a label? And I was like, is that a thing? And they're like, yeah, it's a thing. So I thought, when they first approached me, I thought they wanted something that was just permanent. I was under the impression that they wanted like Anchor Steam Beer, the Anchor Forever with like a, you know, barnacles on it, and they didn't want that. So it was actually like a learning curve for me. For a week or two, I was trying to make something that was just going to be done once.
Yeah, I mean, as little as 5 or 6 years ago, I mean, there was basically your core beers and a seasonal that came out every 3 months, and that was like so few opportunities for artists to break in, and breweries hadn't reached a sort of accelerated fever pitch of release and opening and desire to stand out in this visual marketplace. And I mean, all these things kind of came together to really give artists this new avenue for making a living, which is not hard to make an artistic living in this day and age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go back I know when Brooklyn Brewery was founded many years ago, they hired a noted designer to make that. Milton Glaser.
Yeah.
So how has that changed? I mean, think back to that. I mean, how many opportunities were there for something like that? I don't know. I'm just trying to stir the pot here.
Next to nothing.
Glaser. He also did what, the I Heart New York.
Yes. Yeah.
Campaign.
Yeah.
I mean, it's.
So it's pretty. He did some iconic things, but that Brooklyn Brewery logo stayed the same for a long time.
Well, that was a game.
Yeah.
That was a game. Like any branding, the Marlboro Man, like, you know, Coke, things like that. Nothing really changed. I mean, that was you create a distinct branding opportunity, then that's how you identified yourself across the marketplace, across the world.
Yeah. AJ, are people collecting cans now just for the art and not to drink?
What are you asking AJ for?
Yeah. these guys. I've seen that. I've seen people, I get messages all the time of their collections in their, you know, their garage, and they'll build shelves, and they have this whole wall. There's a, you know, woman I follow, Chelsea. She used the hashtag Label Love out of Pittsburgh, and she makes these awesome like framed artworks that are just all the cans inside, and yeah, it's wonderful. I mean,
they're really full cans or empty?
I think they're empty. Yeah, she's a beer connoisseur, so I don't think she. Yeah, I think that'd be really heavy against the wall.
That would be very sad.
I hope they were washed out.
Yeah, that's exactly how I think about it too.
We have this terrible story years ago. My old roommate, this is back in Astoria, like 2001. he collected all the wine bottles that were empty, and he'd like stack them up and put them on top of the shelves until you know, we're like, why are all these roaches coming? And then we turned on the light, so it was like your floor moved, like a black carpet shifted to reveal all the white linoleum. And we're just like, this is not right. Then we looked on top, and he never washed out the wine bottles. Oh. And so like the motel. Wine bottles were basically, they were the Roach Motel.
That's a lot of food. A lot of food in those bottles.
So, AJ, what are some questions when you had Earl and Dan on your show? What are questions that you ask the artists on a 16-ounce canvas?
So I have a 10-question consistently that we ask. They're more like a framework, or when artists are afraid to come on, they get worried they're going to make it sound silly or what have you. And so we kind of send them ahead of time. But we like to ask kind of like what the, from a project management standpoint, I like to ask like how much time do you have? So from when the idea comes or the brief comes to when the actually is going to come off the canning line. And it varies. It's really interesting. Some breweries give a month, some give a week, and artists will also give that crazy story of, I had to do a label in like 3 days.
So what about for you guys? Time.
Time. Dan, you want to go first?
You go ahead.
Okay. It really kind of depends. I will say, I want to preface what I'm about to say by being very excited that KCBC is starting to do more pilsners and lagers, because that just means more time. Ultimately, it just means more time. When it was really
also more pilsners,
Pilsners, yeah, for us to drink for sure. And then you know, with a beer that just has to stay in the tank less amount of time, the turnaround's just going to be drastically reduced. So it could range anywhere from, for a lager, I might have development production time, no joke, probably a month. But for bigger beers like IPAs, not that much at all. A week, 2 weeks sometimes, usually a week. It just really kind of depends on workload, you know?
And how long does it take you to kind of create this from the brewery being like, I've got this IPA that's slightly different from the other IPA?
I have the luxury of having one of the brewers that I work with, a dude named Zach Kenny, is like a post ad guy.
Yep.
So he and I can sort of like talk shorthand to get something under production really, really quickly. So that really helps to expedite the process. But from sketch approval to finish, about 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's like a little bit more simplified. And that really does depend on the level of complexity of the illustration, which again is really interesting because this didn't exist years ago. Like it literally comes down to the illustrative need of the can. So for example, one of the can things we work on all the time is a session IPA, the Penguin series. So they kind of go through this universe. So the first one was like really complicated and kind of hard, and then the second one the same deal, but then the last one I just did, which is number 4, is actually really simple because it's a riff on a Jim Gaffigan joke where he goes on to tell you about how he doesn't care about craft beer, like in a joking way, like I don't care about
so
craft
how do
beer,
you represent that graphically?
Well, he said it's like so he says in his article, he says, I don't really care about what, you know, it's just like, I just want a beer. I don't care about your hand-drawn illustration. Who gives a shit? Like, I just want to, you know, it's Penguin versus Cactus. Whatever. I don't care. So then we took Penguin versus Cactus and made it a label. So that just happened like a couple days ago.
Good. So yeah, Dan, you know, with Barrier, I love those early labels that you did.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us one of your favorites and a little bit of backstory.
I mean, still one of my favorites is the very first label I did was, and that was Axla. And,
yes.
Like, I mean, it took a lot of pushback too.
AJ loves that one.
And
oh, a fish guy.
It's a fish reference, which I wish I liked them because we do a ton of fish references in our labels, but I just can't get into it. But despite that, I love the label. And, actually, we have
so Barrier Axla,
another fish reference coming out soon. Hood is coming out, so
you can feel good about Hood.
Axela and
yeah. So it's good. I can't see the labels because we're on air and I don't know the fish references. Thank you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Axela is like a very aggressive, like,
that's fish with a PH.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like a, it's almost like a very heavy, it's almost like a metal song. It's just like,
so
yeah.
Guys who yeah. like fish also like craft beer.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is too, with a lot of these,
I know Barrier does.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You know, I was gonna say with a lot of these beers too, it feels like, you know, the language and the beer name drives the label more so than the beer style. Or I guess, how do you see sort of the name that people come up with, like working in tandem with the style to create inspiration for the art?
I guess it kind of depends. The idea of working with three, okay, so for Kings County Brewery Collective, for example, we have three people that are individuals who come from separate backgrounds who might have something very specific in mind that's like really interesting and it just drives the illustration. And then there's other times where somebody says, Ninja Kitties, and you're like, okay, what the hell is that? And they have no ideas, and then you just kind of, you have the ability from your background or like referencing source material or something like that to be able to come up with like an image for this label. That could be successful or not. I mean, it really kind of depends on.
And then in hand, I have, tell us the beer, second beer you have in hand.
Okay, so this is.
Tell us about that label.
So this is Strap Light. This is a rice lager that KCBC puts out. It was called Strap Hanger initially, but they've gone to Strap Light Lime, which is what we're drinking right now. And then they also have Strap Light.
I can taste the lime right away.
Yeah. So it's like a Subway scene. It looks like you probably have Tony Clifton on the label here, but you also have like Pam Grier and then also an alien that has an I Love New Blork or.
And then those are the things you input?
Yeah. This,
no.
There's like a.
You mean level. They didn't ask for Tony Clifton?
They did not ask for Tony Clifton. No.
Now, Earl, one of the things I love about KCBC labels is the foil. Mm-hmm. I think that what I've come to realize is like, that's definitely not cheap to do that level of, you know, the foil you see on the boombox and the, you know, the level. Is that, when you're drawing that, do you do that? Or do you have someone who decides that?
I don't do that. I want to be very clear. I don't do that.
Are you surprised? So you're surprised when it comes out like
Sometimes,
that?
Sometimes, yeah, for sure.
Cool.
Usually so you're saying comes, that like chromey
yeah,
aluminum foil.
It's expensive to do.
Let's talk about that. So from design to actual production in hand, what's...
Yeah.
So... Unlike Daniel, I have a secret weapon. Her name is Christy Borg. She was a packaging designer that was basically on the ground before I got to KCBC. They had been canning very, very small amounts for about 2 or 3 months before I came on. So she is a graphic designer. She was a packaging designer for KCBC before I got there. So she and I work in tandem, which is really nice because... I literally would not be able to do the scale of illustration that you see on a KCBC can if it was not for Christy Borg's packaging design, because she is the person who handles the font. She is the person who puts packaging together. Yeah.
Great. Hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a minute on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Cart Driver, Denver's home for wood-fired pizzas, fresh oysters, seasonal market plates, cocktails, and conversation. Tucked in a 640-square-foot shipping container space in the heart of Denver's Rhino neighborhood, Cart Driver is the perfect place to stop in for an Italian-style spritz, Prosecco on tap, and a wide variety of tinned fish. Open for lunch, dinner, community hour, and late nights 7 days a week, Cart Driver is here for you with fresh, domestically sourced ingredients and, above all, hospitality. Learn more at cart-driver.com. Well, God didn't know the rainbow sign. I said no more water, better fire next time. My hose army got drowned, dear. Oh, Mary, don't you weep. And Moses stood on the Red Sea shore, smote that army with a 2x4. My hose army got drowned, dear.
Oh, hey, 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 welcome. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Check us out. It's a summer membership drive, heritageradionetwork.org. It's painless. It's good. It supports the network. It's a big network, 35 shows, 10th anniversary Hall of Fame. So we got a great show put together by, thank you, AJ at 16 Ounce Canvas, two great designers of beer labels. And Dan Birch, tell us about my favorite barrier one was, what's the one with the teeth?
That's Money IPA. And that's Evan.
And everyone knows that beer. To me, Money IPA was the first really great New York City area West Coast style craft IPA.
Yeah, I did actually Daddy Warwick's before that, which is the double version of that, and that has our main sales rep now,
Mike Discarfino.
Mike Discarfino, head of marketing now. That's him. And then on Money was Evan, the owner, but he didn't want his face on it. So that's why we have the cap over his eyes, and he's become like a character throughout the series. Actually, yeah. I have one that's coming out soon with, what's the collab? It's coming out soon. It has him shocked about hop prices, so.
But design. What about the design? So the money look. I like the teeth thing. That's what that's curious about. Like how you get this. So you've kind of got your interesting illustrations on KCBC, but the teeth and that Money IPA look. Where did that come from, Dan?
That came from Evan. Like they said he wanted gold teeth and just. Like he wanted his tattoos. Like he'd just gotten the new tattoos.
Evan Klein, yeah.
Evan Barry Klein, Brewing, yep. And I was like, yeah, sure, definitely. So that's.
And if you go to Dan's, is it your Behance page, right? Like you can see, like it's pretty. I mean, it's he probably hasn't updated in a while, so. But it's if you look at it, it's got all the early ones. You can see the photos he took, the early sketches he did.
What's his website?
If you go to
it's behance.net/DFBirch, oh. I believe.
And it's really cool because you can
thank
see.
Thank you. That's really helpful.
It's been a while since I've updated.
Well, so. Behance, Daniel Birch on Instagram.
Right. Behance is an artist website that they use, kind of like a Twitter, a Facebook thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I remember early on seeing that. And I always love the artist, who show the behind the scenes stuff. I love early sketches where you can kind of see where it goes. And so Dan had the kind of these case studies of, you know, the axilla and about 5 or 6 different ones that he did early on. And so it's just a testament to how busy he is. He can't update it. I think I always say if the artist's website is updated within the last 30 days, then they're not really, they're not as busy as they could be.
So I got a question because, you know, with Barrier started off doing the 16-ounce, I think it was 16-ounce bottles. So it was like, it was like 500 milliliter bottles.
Yeah,
so
500 milliliters.
So how did your design process shift from doing bottles of that size moving into cans?
Great question.
It was just more space, so it was better. better. So.
Is more space always better? Because more space means more things to fill. And like, you know, with limitations, creating within limitations is great, but also creating within vast.
I didn't know how it would go, but like when we switched over, it was definitely more fun. And there was actually a collab that we did with Magnify in Jersey, which. This was like 2 years ago. Had we done it with the full label, it would have looked like an explosion, and it would have looked like it was going on the can. But I didn't have, you know, that extra room, so that would have helped that label. So
I guess for you guys, how important or how fun it is for you to put in Easter eggs into your design, like things that make you happy, things that maybe nobody else will get.
I would just go ahead and say that.
Well, he put Tony Clifton in.
The way illustration works on these, I
Alan
feel
and Tony
like,
Clifton from Two Boots Pizza.
Yeah, exactly.
So, what movie was that from? No one even knows.
No.
Tony Clifton, Pam Grier. I don't know either. So you,
sorry,
some
Jimmy.
Of these well, you're oh, asking wait, about Easter eggs.
There
but,
was a razor blade hidden in Pam Grier. No, wait, that was a.
See, but Josh is asking about Easter eggs and things. At some point, does everyone get the reference? Some of you guys know the fish references. I mean, do you think? And AJ, how quirky do these have to be? Like, are you hiding references that certain people get that make it more collectible?
Well, no, if you talk to them, they'll get excited. Like one guy would...
I love talking about my references.
Patrick Henze out of Philly, he does for Abomination Brewing. He always puts his daughter's initials in the artwork. So it's kind of a nod to his daughter. He's like, you know, a proud father. And then J.P. Flexner out of Philly, I was mentioning before, he gave me a nod as an Easter egg in one of his most recent labels. He had a hop that was on the beach hanging out and did a slew of tattoos after the interview, and he put the hashtag 16-ounce canvas on his arm, and we talked about an album that we both really liked, Green Day's Kerplunk, and so it was that with the Green Day flower, like the famous flower, right next to each other, and it was their official beer for the Van Warped Tour. It went out to market, and then I saw it, and I was like, I was pretty dumbfounded that never really happened before. And so, yeah, some artists, you can tell by their style, if they're, you know, if they're photorealism, it's probably a little more difficult, but when you get in some of these little more creative, you know, trippier kind of places that aren't real, you can kind of do
Josh,
a lot of stuff.
Josh, that's what you meant by Easter egg? Like a
yeah,
little
just like
gift?
Hidden little fun things yeah. that like either the illustrator knows, or it's a nod to a small little in-joke that nobody else is going to get.
Now,
I mean,
wait, are we going
to
talk about the fact that Josh has his own beer label, right? Weekend at Bernstein's.
We did that, yeah, for my 40th birthday last year. I'm 41 now, but yeah.
He's older than me.
Woo, you're a young woo,
which, yeah. which,
you're a spring
which
chicken.
Which brewery was that? Or what?
KCBC, yeah. I mean, I was like, I've known Tony Pete and Zach Sarah like homebrewer days, and so... They were all in the homebrew back then, so it was like, what brewery would actually be game for some dumb idea? And I'm like, KCBC. So I talked to them, and it's basically like, you know what? We're going to do this illustration, this design on there, too. And it would be game just like running off, you know, like 8 cases of beer, which is nothing. All they got to do is swap out the illustration, and all of a sudden you get a special branded beer. So we did it Weekend at Bernstein's, because we rented a house in the Rockaways, which is a beach community out in Queens. And then we did a... They may remember it's Weekend at Bernie's where the guy's dead and everybody holds him up. And it's like, and they're just taking him around all these crazy sort of beach situations. So we had me in the middle as sort of like the dead Bernie. And then it was great. We had a fantastic time. We end up with a case of beer at the end of it, too. And I'm like, what the heck am I going to do with like a case more of the beer I've drank for 3 days straight? So we were moving. I didn't want to move with all this beer. So I just put out on Instagram, like, if anybody wants to come over and get this can of beer. And it was really kind of wild because people were actually like, I'll come to your house and get a can of that special beer that was only made one time. And yeah. I was just like, it's just the power of something that you can only get once, which I think also plays into like all this, why all these cans right now are so popular. It's just that these designs, these beers are oftentimes only one time only.
So it can be the same beer. Yeah. But you're changing the label, too.
You're changing the hopping, and you change the label, and you change the hopping. I mean, this is the Strap Light.
Strap Light Lime. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Strap Hanger, but with a twist.
It's just not as sugary. It's not as, like, it doesn't feel as, like, bready as their regular Strap Light, even though there's no bread in there. It's just rice.
Right. Dan, we were talking about Easter eggs. You were about to say something.
It's funny that you say... Weekend at Bernstein's, because the reference I was going to talk about was for our Barrier's label Lomax, which is another Weekend at Bernie's romance. This is sort of sad. Evan's dog had just died, and so as a tribute, the dog that's on that label catching a frisbee is Evan's dog that had just died. So that was for the dogs.
Well, cheers to you guys, man.
Yeah.
AJ, I bet you can talk all night about this, but
I could. One of the ones, like, I think that we were talking before about the one-offs. I think early on, they weren't one-offs. Because really, our first episode we did was with Dan Blakesley, who did Hetty Topper. And I always say, like, if I was going to do a Mount Rushmore beer labels, or, you know, I think the Hetty Topper would be one of the first. And he's a traveling kind of like troubadour musician. And he was in Vermont doing, you know, working on his gig poster, which are really cool. And John from The Alchemist saw him at a coffee shop and said, hey, I really like your art and your style. Like, would you think about helping us do some late? Like, and Hetty Topper, and he did Focal Banger and Holy Cow. Like, those two beers, Hetty and Focal, were staples that never changed probably for over a decade. And so it's really kind of cool to see that. My friend Craig Gilbert with New England Brewing Company. He did Gandhi Bot, which was actually got a lot of heat for that one over time. But like for a while, they were really they didn't really change. And so it's really been interesting to see like how a variant, you add a new fruit or whatever, and it's like, okay, we need a new label. Where early on, it wasn't really like that.
I was gonna say I've got a Dan Blakely T-shirt from my wife. Grew up in New Hampshire from the Elvis Room. Old dive bar, which was really popular in Portsmouth, New Hampshire back in the day.
We connected. I saw he posted something as a writer, and I was like, is that a Dan Blakesley? And he's like, oh, how did you realize? And it wasn't the focus of his post, but it was like...
yeah. Actually, Josh, how did you start writing articles about beer art? I mean, were you asked to do that, or that was your interest?
Your eyes just saucered.
I don't know. Oh, I mean, it's like, how do you write about anything? You notice something, and you ask yourself why. I mean, it's just kind of like, why did art become popular? Why did we have this visual fascination in our culture? Why did social media take over in this sense, too? And, like, how important was it? And how, you just watch all these things start happening. Because can art was not, I mean, it was pretty basic and pretty pretty simple. Bottle art was not exactly something. It was very, you go back to the 90s and 80s, I mean, it was terrible. I mean, it was like somebody got, like, an apple and then, like, had, like, some rudimentary cut-and-paste thing, and they were like, here's a beer label, it says Porter on it, good to go. And you just watch things get more evolved and more intricate, and, I mean, as the beer styles, like, changed, the art changed, too. And, I mean, it's not just the beers that changed. I mean, like, the driving of double IPAs, Imperial IPAs, like, goes as all these things open up this whole new avenue of artistic expression that didn't exist previously.
I saw the explosion of like beer art happen like while I was working at Union. Like this was like 6-7 years ago now.
Probably am.
And I think Prairie was like the first one that was like doing really wild and crazy artwork. And I was like, besides like Hetty Topper and stuff, those guys, like, I'm really glad to see that they're still pumping out pretty cool stuff. But when they started out, like, they were like, I can do that.
And Josh, one of your articles, you mentioned that Stillwater, Brian Strumke, said that, what did he say?
I have no idea, Jimmy. Okay. I write so many articles.
I read it. He basically said that Strumke said that a couple of his classics, Cellar and Stateside, were reinvigorated by the can art.
Yeah, I mean, reinvigorating the art has changed a number of fortunes out there, too. And I mean, you don't want to drink with your eyes first more than you that's what draws you in there. Mm-hmm. So you've got this great thing, and you're like, oh, what's that? I've not seen that before. And you want to grab onto it. And that's it, too. And I mean, if you're a brewery opening up in 2019 and not thinking about how important your art is as much as your beer, then you're doing a disservice to your thing. You should rewrite your business plan. I mean, essentially, you have to think about how things look, what you're doing, your approach, all these things that were not really necessary. I mean, it's funny talking to folks at Threes a few years ago. I mean, when they started canning after they opened up as a brewery. Then I was talking to Greg, the former brewmaster, and it was basically like, people think we didn't really exist until we started going into cans. And that's this idea that you don't exist till you can hold it in your hand. That being a beer in a pint glass, that's like a different shade of yellow or brown or black does not matter at all. Mm. It's a can art that really separates. Like, I mean, let's be perfectly honest. A lot of these new IPAs things are not night and day difference out there, too. It's not like this 180 that's so different from lagers, the same sort of introduction that we had years ago. Nowadays, I mean, the art can really be the differentiation point that really sets yourself apart.
You guys, just other artists that inspire you, maybe they're not doing beer art and you wish they would, past and present.
Ooh. I mean, that's
you gotta pick one each.
That's a loaded question, for sure.
We're talking art, and then AJ has like 10. So.
Yeah. No, no. Yeah, I know he's gonna pick one.
James Jean, that dude, if he did a beer label, wow. Yeah.
What do you know him as?
He did the comic book covers for Fable. He's most known for really, really beautiful artwork. And actually, Earl went to school with him.
I did go to school.
I just found that out this week.
We were talking and
very jealous.
It just came out. Yeah, yeah.
And then an artist that we from you.
If I was gonna go ahead and pick one automatically, like just like Lizard Brain, I don't understand why Joe Jesko isn't making more beer label art. He has done one, and of course I can't remember the name of the brewery. That doesn't mean that I don't care about the beer.
But what is he known as?
He's like Joe Jesko is like a ridiculous like oil painting cover comic book master. Like he just if you want to name a Marvel comic book character, he's probably painted that person on a trading card or on a fully painted cover of a comic or on like a wizard or like comics guide or something like that. Just really amazing.
And AJ, yeah. So on your site, I mean, do you go deeper into this? We can learn more about artists that are doing labels and some of their backstories.
Yeah. Early on, we would transcribe it to text, and that was a disaster.
Oh, my God. Yeah, don't ask us what we think.
Because the interview to text, you think it's going to be a good idea, and I think for probably the first, like, 40 or 50 interviews, I would pay this service, and they would transcribe it to text, and all of our uhs and weird spatial dialogue things, it just would be painful. So I stopped doing that. But and you're talking about artists I love. A lot of times now I just follow artists I think are wonderful and I hope that they do one beer-related project. There's this great graffiti artist in Portland, Maine, Ryan Adams, and he does this geometric like font that's just really unique and all this cool stuff. And I just hope that someday somebody would have him be an artist, and he finally did. And so I was like, hey, I saw you did one label one time. Would you be a guest? And that's really how I approach it. I'm really kind of, a lot of these artists, I just kind of follow along and hope that somebody picks up and sees that how their unique label, like unique design can be a cool label.
Is there a business for scouting artists for labels? I mean, that could be, that'd be an interesting way, or agents.
Yeah.
I have gotten reached out to by a few breweries and a few folks to recommend some folks. If anyone's listening and can figure out a way to monetize what I'm doing, let me know. But it's really just kind of I'm a good networker, and I put people in touch with people, and you know, we got some stuff that's happening.
And then going back, so the old way was you had one great label, one great logo.
Yeah.
For the designers, tell me one great beer label from years past that you liked, that you think is good design.
That's a good question.
I mean, as design goes, I think my strongest has been with Alewife, which I started just a year ago. And I think that's a toss-up. I really like Thousand Stars, and I really like Electric Rhino. Like, those two turned out really nice. And like, the typography on both of them, and yeah, everything's...
And you're going to do a lot more with Alewife, too.
Yeah, I I have two labels due this week for them, as well as two labels due for Barrier. So I have a very packed week.
Pat, Dan's working on them right now. He's got his sketchbook out.
Yeah, I haven't stopped
sleeping.
Drawing.
Yeah. Earl?
If we're talking about myself, I would say probably the Strap Hanger label was like a real kind of a breakout label for me, like really early on. Kind of encapsulating an entire culture of... from left to right, like it's all there kind of a thing. But my first label artist would be Ralph Steadman for Flying Dog.
I
feel like that was like a real moment where I was like, oh wait, somebody's making this awesome art for a throwaway container. It's kind of, I hadn't thought of that before. Kind of crazy.
I have many of those original labels. That's totally what got me into craft beer too.
Ralph Steadman. I mean,
but they probably would have looked better on a can than on a bottle, right?
Probably better on a can. Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and say that right now. Yeah. Ralph Steadman, if you're listening, it would have been way better on a can.
I've reached out to his people and Evan Cohen, who does Hudson Valley. Those are two of my like bucket list. But I would say. Here in New York, Evil Twin Brewing, the cool thing, Martin Jussessen, you look at their labels and you think they're pretty simple, like the Big Jesus and Bikini Beer and all that stuff. But if you look at it, all their art and design are based around a triangle. So everything they do is based around a triangle. He did the glasses at Torst, which is one of the best beer bars in the world. And they break it down, you know, all right.
Wrap it up, AJ. Right. Let's go.
The
Evil Twin. What's the name of the Evil Twin?
Martin Jussessen. Martin Jussessen. So he's great. And the glasses for Torst, they're based, the triangles are based on tiers of pours. So an 8-ounce pour and a full pour. So there's the bottom of the triangle and the top of the triangle where they get a
so
full pour.
So it's like
pour.
Design and function. What are they, Danish?
He's
design guys, you know, yeah. Design and function.
And then we have Daniel Endicott from Forest of Maine. He went to school for fine art. He's a watercolorist. He's the owner, brewer, and design, and that's pretty rare. And then I'll just give a
throw out. That is pretty rare, yeah.
Yeah, I give a little quick out to Sophie DeHawkins for Whiplash in Ireland, and she does like collage style, which is all done
so
by
we
hand.
We got to just go at 16OZ Canvas on Instagram, and at Daniel Birch, and at
DF Birch.
DF Birch, and you're what, Funny Bones?
Funny Bone stuff.
And then Josh, you got to wrap it up, the wordsmith. Again, beer can art. So like, we used to have Grammy awards for. I know art directors that won Grammys for, you know, record
Matt Varnish
albums.
Yeah, Matt Varnish. Yeah,
yeah.
What about beer cans?
I'm just gonna reiterate. I mean, they're a new art form for the 21st century. The new art form for the way that we drink now. And I mean, you need to really think about. And again, if you're a business, think about your art, your design. I mean, that's what they're gonna see first. With 8,000 odd breweries in the country. You're not going to be that different with like your Pilsner that's slightly dry hop differently than the other brewery, but your art can set you apart. So it really helps to really think about who you're working with, how to create a relationship that's going to extend from one beer to the next,
Great. Yeah. And last one, so Earl, so talking about that difference in pills, in Italian pills made by KCBC, why that label again? Is that an Italian imagery?
Okay, so the only thing that informed Il Purgatorio as an Italian style pilsner for label is the fact that Zach Kinney, one of the brewers, he spent some time in Italy. So we went back and forth
and it's
on
Il
how to
Purgatorio.
Il Purgatorio. So
Italian pills. Guys, this was an awesome show. Again, AJ, thank you so much for putting the show together. And Josh Bernstein, Danny Birch, and Earl Hollowell. You guys really made this show.
Do you want me to do my daughter? And also my daughter sat silently in the corner eating pizza for the most part.
Pizza. Great.
Thanks,
Josh. The new book that's coming out this fall, which we will have you on again.
Yeah, Drink Better Beer, coming out mid-September with the Rosetta Stone for the Modern Beer Moment.
Nice. Right. I've seen the cover and hard cover. It looks really good.
Great. Big shout out to our producer, Justin Kennedy, assistant producer, Aaliyah Paps, engineer, Matt Patterson. Thanks for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.